He was fired for saying a silent prayer on the 50, and now the Supreme Court will hear his plea. Where did he come from? What made him such a fighter? Bremerton, Washington is an hour-long ferry trip across the Puget Sound from Seattle. Everything here is built around the Navy shipyard, both the town and the lives of the people who work here. Those people are hard-working and friendly, but for many it's a hard life without a lot of options. This is the high school field where our client, Coach Joe Kennedy, took a knee on the 50-yard line for that silent prayer. The school district fired him for that. But there's so much more to Joe Kennedy than that 15 seconds. There were years of being a coach, just trying to bring the best out of his players. As a former Marine, if they got hurt, he'd just tell them to rub some dirt on it and keep going.
I would take my whole football team on a run, you know, at least once, and we did the bridges. And I took them on the long way around, which is about five miles. Slow down when you get right up here to this ditch. So, being good citizens, there was a couple of shopping carts that were up here in this parking lot. And so we were going to return them here to the store. And we started running. And, you know, I had to put one of my linemen in mine, and the other coach had one of the linemen in his, and we were racing across that. And I thought, I'm going to be able to go down that hill and just go out the other side. Well, as I went down into it, it was all muddy, and it buried it in, and it just flipped. And I'm holding on, you know, pushing for the life of me, and it flips me, and the thing wheel came up, hits me right between the legs, flips me up over, and I landed right here in the middle of this road. No idea what happened. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And so coach came over and picked me up, and he's like, you all right? And I was like, get me up. And I couldn't walk, and walked out in front of there, and the rest of the kids came up, and they were, what's wrong, coach? And I was like, oh, just a little tumble. They were like, oh my god, you were flying, your legs were in the air. Take it right here. And I go, yeah. And so my coach said, he goes, you sure you're okay? And I was like, no, I'm not okay. And of course my football team says, just rub some dirt on it, coach.
What was it like growing up in Bremerton for you? What do you remember from this place?
Bremerton was a, you know, kind of low-budget town, I would say. You know, a lot of hard-working folks. Nobody had a lot of money. Kind of a tough town. You know, when anytime you're with a blue-collar community, it's you got some rough times, and a lot of good people, though.
A lot of people hear the prayer thing, if you will, the football game and the kneeling at the 50-yard line and all that, and they may make the assumption that you're a preacher's kid. That's not exactly true, is it?
No, quite the opposite. I was really one of those troubled youths. I was a bad kid. I'm one of the kids I wouldn't want my kids hanging out with, and really had nothing going for me, and took a lot of paths.
You found yourself living literally on the street when you were like 10, 11 years old. What was that like?
Well, when it first happens, you do it out of, you know, anger, and I'll show them, and I don't need anybody else. But after a day of not eating, or it's pouring down rain, or it's 30 degrees outside, and you're out on the streets, and, you know, there's some really spooky people out here.
Yeah.
And it's scary for a kid.
What do you think set you off so much when you were so young?
Another left. I don't know. I don't know where all that kind of anger comes from. I mean, it seemed like everything was fine. I mean, I was mischievous, but I mean, things didn't get bad until it was right after my parents told me that I was adopted, or me and my sister were adopted, and that all kind of made sense, and it just like solidified that big wedge in our family, and we both came off the rails right at that point. And I don't know, 8, 9, or 10, somewhere in there, when I was a kid, I needed a place to stay. I was homeless and no place to go, pouring down rain. So I walked my way up here to the church, and I knew that churches are a good safe place to actually go. And it was all locked up in the middle of the night, so I kind of Jimmy the door open and walked in, and it was probably the most terrifying night of my life. You know, I think it was going to be a warm, safe place, and it was, but, you know, all wood and candles burning and shadows, and it was probably the spookiest place on earth. It's great to be able to find a place that is, you know, relatively safe for a kid. I mean, what are you going to do when you're 10? I mean, where do you stay?
Part of your story is you grew up in Bremerton, had a troubled youth. It was rough.
Right.
You came back to Bremerton. Tell me why. What made you come back here? What did you hope to accomplish?
At first, I just wanted to get back to my roots. And, you know, I kind of wanted to, you know, prove to others, you know, this is what I've become. This is what I've done with my life. And, you know, that's kind of boring. You really realize why I'm back here is because there's a need in this town. You know, the kids at the high school, I need to give back to my community. And I'm not equipped to help out in, you know, in church realm or any of these other kind of things. But leadership and development of young men from, you know, the military was right up my alley. And it was the absolute perfect calling that I could give back to my community and actually kind of like do penance, you know. It's how do you atone for a lifetime of causing pain to others? And I like to think that, you know, I know that's not what it's all about, but it does make you feel good to know that you can reach out and help at least one kid who's going through something that I went through when I was a kid.
When you talk about them, I get the impression that in the eyes of the kids that you work with, the young men that you work with, you saw yourself a lot.
Too many times I saw me very much so. And it breaks your heart to see kids that, you know, a lot of these kids don't have a father, you know, single family homes, mom's doing the best they can, and they need positive male role models, and you can't get it on TV, you're not going to get it home, you're not going to get it out in, you know, in the school, where do you get it? Somebody has to reach into these kids' lives and be there for them. So that was really how I saw those kids. It was like, there's the chance that I could reach out and not be left and help these kids become something, so they didn't have to go down the roads that I went down.
You prayed, you got fired. This has been a 7-year battle, give or take. Now it's real. It's at the Supreme Court. We're just, it may be as soon as a few weeks from now. I mean, several weeks from now. What's it like being in the middle of that? I mean, you've really been carrying this for a long time. What's it like to be, in a sense, first in goal and see that here we are?
You know, you can use a perfect analogy of that. You know, it feels like double overtime, and you're against your, you know, cross-team rival. I think about, we've been through court, I don't know what, this is going to be our sixth time.
Yeah.
And, you know, after you get beat six times by a team, it gets old really quick, and you really... You don't want to go for that last one and end up losing in double overtime. And that's the way I feel right now, is that it's about time it's heard by the right people. And it's a finale. We're going to get the answer. And whatever the answer is the answer. There's nothing else after.
You talked about getting beat several times, but really, that was just the score along the way. The only score that really matters is the score at the end of the game, and that's what we're about to see.
Right, and I always put it towards my marathon when I would run marathons, and, you know, yeah, it's easy to run 24 miles. It's that last 2 miles when you see the sight. There's the end, and it doesn't seem like it's getting any closer, but you know it's just right there, and all the pain and all the endurance that you have to go through for that, you know, like 2 days in football, you train and train and train, and you fight and fight and fight, and finally we're gonna be at that Super Bowl, and we're gonna see what happens at the end.
First Liberty has been alongside Coach Joe Kennedy since that night that got him fired for saying a silent 15-second prayer on the 50-yard line. Jeremy Dice is one of our attorneys at First Liberty Institute. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Stuart.
Tell me what this case is really about.
This case is going to decide whether or not someone can be fired from their job simply because they can be seen engaged in private prayer. That's exactly what Coach Kennedy did. He walked out to the 50-yard line, took a knee, and maybe 15, maybe 30 seconds worth of prayer by himself at the 50-yard line, and that's why the school district fired him. If he can be fired for that, then every teacher, every coach, and every employee in the country really risks their job if they can be seen engaged in religious activity while on the clock.
Now, the Supreme Court is going to hear oral arguments on this. We
now, because it's because of COVID, we all get to listen in on those arguments, at least by audio. You don't get to see inside the courtroom. But as you're listening into those arguments, what are you going to be listening for?
Well, I'm going to be wanting to hear what the questions are and how far they're going to want to take this case. For instance, Bremerton offered Joe a couple different of accommodations that really were not very accommodating at all. For instance, he could have gone into the school building is way over there across the field, up the hill, to take that prayer up there. But, I mean, that's a significant walk in which he's got to go inside and, frankly, send a wrong message. I'll talk about that in a second. Or he could have gone into the press box, which happens to be
right above our heads.
Right above us. But in order to do that, he'd have to walk outside around the block, up the stairs, and into the press box, which doesn't make any sense either. Here's why neither of those accommodations would work out and why Coach was unwilling to accept either of them. That's because no religious activity needs to be hidden from view. And to send that message, especially to the students, would send a message that prayer is wrong and has to be hidden from sight. No one should be fired from their job for engaged in a 15 seconds worth of prayer, but they shouldn't be required to go hide who they actually are. Now, you've heard Coach say that even today, but how important it is to send that message to students. Bremerton is sending the message that it is wrong to be seen engaged in prayer or seen to be engaged in any religious activity. If that's the standard, then the First Amendment means nothing. I want to hear the justices reaffirm the importance of the Free Exercise Clause in our Constitution.
Let's talk about the larger impact of this then. Who else would be impacted by a victory in Joe Kennedy's case potentially?
Yeah, look, every teacher in the country, every coach that is employed by a public school, if they can be seen engaged in religious activity, which is what the Ninth Circuit basically held in this case, then their job is on the line. So if you've got a teacher that is bowing his head over his lunch in the cafeteria, then that teacher can be fired from his job. If you have a teacher wearing a crucifix in the classroom, well, she could be fired from her job. If you have a teacher that is wearing a yarmulke or another one wearing a hijab, all those are outward displays of religion that students can ably see. They should be terminated from their job as well. Even on the football field, what if the quarterback gets hurt and a coach goes to the center of the field with the athletic training staff and bows his head in silent prayer, praying that kid doesn't have a broken leg or torn ACL? Yeah. Well, that could be grounds for termination as well. The breadth of this case, is terrible on that side of it all. But on the other side, if the Supreme Court reverses what the Ninth Circuit held here and upholds the right for people to be able to be who they are in terms of faith while on the job, then that protects becomes much more robust. I think about a case back in the 1960s called Tinker v. Des Moines, which said that neither students nor teachers have to shed their constitutional rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gates. That should apply when it comes out here to the football field as well. And I want to hear that reaffirmation by the Supreme Court.
One last question for you. Was it worth it?
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind. I would do everything all over again. Because if people don't stand up and fight for what they believe in, I mean, what's the point? Why? How could I have been a coach if I told kids to give up if it got hard? Or you know you're going to lose, or it's going to cause you some pain. So just quit? No, I would have been, I couldn't coach, I couldn't be that guy. So, yeah, absolutely. If anything, it shows the kids that, hey, you fight until the end. It doesn't matter what the score is, but you never stop fighting.